to my friend Nate and all the listeners of this podcast, no one circles the wagons than Nate the Skate. Circle the wagons, Buffalo.
Where else would you rather be than right here, right now?
Welcome to the Circling the Wagons podcast, a podcast discussing the Bills all year round with interviews, news, recaps, and insightful fan discussion. Most times. Here's your host and lifelong Bills fan, Nate.
Hey, Bills Mafia. Welcome to another episode. Well, really the first episode of Circling the Wagons, a Buffalo Bills fan podcast, where we are completely, completely independent. The first time we've been independent and non-corporate since 2018, maybe when we started with Rumblings. So we're going to talk about that in a bit, but we are completely out of Rumblings. Rumblings canceled their podcast network. It wasn't just Circling the Wagons. It was every show on the network. Vox Media shut it down. We're going to talk about that later, but there's a lot of Bills talk to have in this episode of Circling the Wagons. We are going to discuss the Stephon Diggs trade, which is just like, what? Like, this is, there's a lot to unravel here, and a lot's come out since that day. So if you were listening to some reaction podcasts from other places then, like, there's a lot more that we know now. So we're going to dive into that in a very in-depth way, you know, statistically, emotionally, physically, like all these things. We're going to hit it from all perspectives. We're going to talk about our updated big Buffalo Bills, big board of needs, positional needs, I guess. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about what it would cost to trade up into the draft to potentially get a top three wide receiver, because we're kind of looking at that range now with the loss of Stephon Diggs. So a lot of things, Lyle Collins signing, a lot of things to discuss in this episode. So I'm joined by my co-host, John. John, we're no longer part of Buffalo Rumblings. We're on our own completely, just like we did 7 years ago, almost 8 years ago now. How are you doing, man?
Doing great. Just like how we started, back on our own. Go Bills. Let's go. What do you got?
there's a lot of stuff to talk about, man. I'm very excited to talk to you because the Stephon Diggs thing, man, like this is, it's funny. I didn't think this was going to happen. Can I say that first off? Like, this wasn't on my radar. It all felt like it was conjecture for the longest time, that the national media was kind of putting together this narrative that Stephon Diggs, ever since he left, even before he left Minnesota, he doesn't want to be here. He wants to be traded. And then he eventually does get traded. And we're like, oh, you know, he's coming here. This is great. And Vikings fans were like, just see, just wait and see. He's, you know, he's going to want to leave you too. And we're like, no, that's not how it's going to be, man. Like, he wants to stay. He likes us. And then, like, you know, the drama started happening, you know, on the field, on the sidelines, and then over Twitter between his cryptic tweets and then his little brother's tweets and then, you know, so on and so forth. And it just kind of kept spitballing. But even up until the day, the morning or, you know, afternoon of the trade, like, I didn't think this was going to happen. And a lot of people, did you see this? This is a complete surprise to you, I imagine, also, right?
Yeah, I agree. I thought mostly because of the dead cap. However, eating the dead cap this year frees up the money next year, and also getting a second round pick this year means they don't have to settle for less next year. So they ended up getting good value for Diggs. It's unfortunate that receiver was already one of their biggest needs, but I could see why they did it. It wasn't expected. To your point about Diggs not being happy in Minnesota and wanting to be traded and everything else, he might not ever be satisfied with, but not, I'm not coming at this from a super negative standpoint. He just might be that, like, meticulous about his routine where he wants everybody around him and the quarterback to be, like, I don't know how it was with him in Minnesota, but I don't know how it's going to be. I can't speculate. But
so, yeah, go ahead.
One other thing I wanted to point out is that he's going from wide receiver one in Buffalo to maybe wide receiver three in Houston, potentially. He's definitely not going to be number one. Nico Collins is going to be number one. It's going to be between him and Dell for a second in targets. I don't know how he's going to feel about that, But he does have a really good young quarterback, in the, maybe on the same caliber as Allen and Mahomes. So, you know, the Bills could play Houston in the AFC Championship next year. Who knows?
Yeah. The so the compensation for the for Stephon Diggs was a fifth and sixth. The Bills gave Stephon Diggs and a fifth and sixth round pick this year for a second round pick next year. I think you might have said this year, second round pick this year. But it's a second round pick next year. Or you might have been saying, well, it would have been nice to have a second round pick this year. I forget exactly what you said. But
yeah, I might have misspoke. Sorry.
There was, but that, I mean, that's pretty good compensation. At first I was upset. I'm like, this isn't nearly enough. Like I thought that, but then I was thinking about, well, he is older. This isn't, you know, he does have a lot of money due. But since that trade, since the day of that trade, Houston basically voided the last 3 years of his contract and he's on a 1 year deal. So like you said, John, like he might end up being wide receiver two or three in Houston, but he's going to have a chance at another contract.
Oh, he'll be a wide receiver number one in Kansas City in 2 years.
Oh God. Don't say that. I don't need a really. Yeah. Yeah. That would be soul crushing. There was, I don't even know if it's speculation. I think it's a report now that the, Brandon Bean and the Bills front office allowed Stephon Diggs's representation to look for a trade with another team. And it was like everyone but Casey, anyone in the NFL but Casey. And that, you know, obviously didn't come to fruition, but for Casey, but I'm glad that's the, would have been the last place that we would have want to send Stephon Diggs, but he might get there in 2 years anyway. So it doesn't matter, but I don't want to look at it from a negative standpoint. I want to look at it from the thing. It's just really interesting because like there was a lot of signs that this could have happened the whole time. And we just kind of ignored them, you know, like, or we're just like, well, you know, first there was the, and somebody on Twitter, I'm going to share this, but somebody on Twitter had this really good, like timeline of, you know, the deterioration of the relationship with Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen, right? So he wrote this thread. It was from at 17 for six. So Brandon writes, the earliest known point of the Allen and Diggs friction is the week of the 2022 divisional playoff game against the Bengals. According to Eric Turner, founder of Cover One, Allen had been repeatedly missing Diggs on a play the Bills were working on leading up to the game. During practice, Allen told Diggs, just get open, I'll get it to you. However, during the game, on a fourth down, Diggs released differently than what had been practiced due to his matchup using outside leverage. Allen went on in his progression because of this. Diggs's later outburst to Allen was him asking Allen what his excuse was, because during the week, Allen, instead of getting the play down, told Diggs to just get open. The blow up was because Allen wasn't taking the time to figure it out in practice, and it showed up in a big spot. Now, John, I'm going to stop right there real quick. There's only a few more tweets after this, but like, not for nothing. This is all speculation. We don't know this for sure, right? Like, none of this is, you know, can be proven by either party. But I will say this, from what we know about Josh Allen, like, this kind of sounds on brand a little bit, right? Like, this, not that Allen doesn't try hard or work hard or practice hard, but it's just kind of like, I kind of see him being like, just get open, I'll give you the ball, you know, like that kind of seems like, you know, don't worry about my offseason nutritional regimen. I'll be in shape by the time the season rolls around. You know what I mean? The kind of, and I can't blame him. It's not like I'm better at what I do, or I'm not like, well, I'll just have a, you know, 10 chocolate chip cookies tonight instead of, you know, going to bed at 8:30, right? Like, I'm not perfect, but that kind of does seem a little bit on brand, doesn't it?
Yeah, I could see Allen being like, hey, just say here when you're open. Just like Thanksgiving football for
Thanksgiving
us.
Football. That was my favorite play. The here play. Yeah. Just get open. I just say here, and then just, you know. So for those that don't know, we used to play Thanksgiving football for like 10 years or something like that, or 15 years with high school friends. And the big play was like, you come back to the ball and say here. And the person that was covering that person would obviously think that they were going to throw it. And then that person just bolted for the end zone. And it was always, always a wide open touchdown. I mean, you got to sell that here, though. You can't be like, here. It's like, here.
Yeah, plant the foot, button hook, here, and then sprint.
Streak towards the end zone and don't look for that pass to be over your head. Yeah. But yeah, so. Yeah, I could definitely, and I don't blame him for that. Like, that makes sense. Allen's like, I'll get it to you. He's very confident, right? He's confident in his arm. He's confident in his ability to see him open. But if I'm reading that right, I would be kind of pissed off if I was Diggs too.
But didn't, like, we see, like, over the years, like, all these off-season things that he's done with Jordan Palmer and whatever and improving his game? And we definitely saw improvement from his rookie year to his second and third year. So, like, he's obviously doing things, or do you think he's just like, oh, I did enough and now I'm good?
So this is what I worry about Josh Allen in general, because, you know, we don't really know and nothing's ever proven. And this is all complete speculation. But, you know, like Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal, right? Shaq, he was like one of the best big men in the NBA ever. He's a monster, right? He's like, what, 7'2", like 300 pounds. Like, there's never been a guy like that since then or before then, right? Like, just, but he was never truly in shape. You know what I mean? Like, he was always in good shape, but never like LeBron James shape, right? Like, the guy's like 2% body fat, right? Like, not that you need Shaq to be like that, but Shaq wasn't that guy. And it's just like, he was still a Hall of Famer, still one of the best to ever play. He could have been that much better, though. You know, like, he could have gone from, like, you know, I don't know, being 95% of it to like 100% of his output, right? Like, there's just more he could have done, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. He could have worked on his free throw. Shaq, I think, had a below 50% free throw percentage his entire career. Like, that was the thing. Like, they'd play hack a Shaq because they knew that he couldn't sink his free throw. So it's like, oh, just follow the guy, you know? He could have gotten better at that. He just never put the time in. Not that he wasn't great, but he could have been better. I worry about that with Josh Allen. I'm not saying that he's going down that route, obviously, but my worry is that he thinks he's good enough as is and that he doesn't need to put in that extra, like, Tom Brady, you know, off-season regimen, you know, where he's, like, you know, on his nutrition nonstop and he's, you know, living, he's exercising, he's doing this. Like, Allen doesn't come across as that guy, and I'm worried that it's not going to be until he's, like, yeah, like we talked about a few podcasts ago, in his 30s until he realizes he has to be like that.
I don't know. That sounds like a leap. Like, he's still very great. He's a top two quarterback in the league still.
But could he be better?
Between him and Mahomes.
But could he be better? Could he be better? Could he do more? Could he try harder? Could he be that number one? We just assume, like, oh, it's Patrick Mahomes. Like, he could be better. Why couldn't he be better than Patrick Mahomes?
Maybe he is.
I'm not ready to say that yet.
Maybe Allen needs a better supporting cast.
What if he was good enough to overcome that deficiency in supporting cast?
Maybe he has been good enough to go against some of those deficiencies already. Because if you look at the receiving core over the last 5-6 years, they've had Diggs, but who else have they had? Nobody.
Yeah, they haven't.
Other teams can lock on Diggs, and that's it. They finally got Kincaid last year, and now they lost Diggs. So now, you know, still need another weapon. They've never had a great running game. They've had some efficiencies, some good running backs, but nothing spectacular. Maybe Cook will be that guy. Offensive line has finally been a little gelling and solidified a little bit better, I think. I know they lost Miss Morris, but I think overall the line is starting to gel pretty well.
I think a lot of that has to do with not only, like, you know, talented guys, but Aaron Cromer coming on as the offensive line coach. I think that's, I was just listening to, you know, Eric Wood talk about it and, like, how, because he coached Eric Wood at one point under Rex Ryan. And then, like, listening to the offensive linemen he's had on his podcast, and they'll say, like, Cromer will take each offensive lineman's best abilities and use that during the game, you know? And I'm like, that's great. Instead of saying, like, we all do this one thing or we all do this other thing, and maybe two people are really good at it, but three aren't, or four people are really good at it, one isn't. He just goes for each lineman's best abilities, which is what you want, which is great. So I give Cromer a lot of credit. Obviously, I would like to think that they talked to Cromer before, you know, they released Mitch Morris, like, hey, can we do this with Connor McGovern? And he's like, absolutely. Okay, great. Awesome. And then can we have David Edwards as our starting left guard? Is that going to work? Okay, great. You know, we got that. So. And we're going to get to Lyle Collins in a minute, but John, you know, I, with the Stephon Diggs thing, you know, there was also, you know, it led not only to that blow up on the sidelines against the Bengals, like it basically carried over into the mandatory mini camps last season before training camp. Like, you know, all the veterans are supposed to be there. Stephon Diggs is supposed to be there, and he, you know, either doesn't show up or there's an issue in the locker room or there's something going on, to which Sean McDermott at a press conference says he's very concerned about Stephon Diggs. Like, nobody was worried about Diggs either not being there or whatever until Sean McDermott said, I'm very concerned. Remember?
So I can't remember where I heard it, but I heard from somewhere that he showed up, McDermott, there was a thing, and McDermott told him just to go home. And then,
yeah, not a good thing.
When it was reported that he didn't show up, McDermott didn't say that he told him to go home. He's like, oh, yeah, I don't know. So that's an issue. If that's true,
why wouldn't you say that? Or, yeah, it's.
Then it's on McDermott.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, I think some of it was on McDermott because then the day after he'd be like, no, I'm not worried. It's like, wait a minute, you were just concerned, very concerned. And so, like, I don't think McDermott's not one for hyperbole or anything like that, where he's just like, wow, that was just crazy. Like, I'm really concerned. He's very, for the most part, even keeled, right? Like, doesn't give you a whole lot. Doesn't, you know, he does, but he doesn't. Like, he doesn't really talk about specific players. And
he usually tries to give you just what he wants to give you, but.
Yeah. But that time, it felt like he was actually shooting from the hip, and he's just like, his emotions for once.
Or his emotions, yeah.
Where he's actually wearing his emotions for once, and you're just like, oh, he's doing that.
Pissed at Diggs or something, but.
So it continued on then, and I remember at the time, and we talked about it, we're like, this is really concerning. It sounds like they haven't talked this entire offseason, right? Like, this was the first time those two guys, like, from the whole time, we thought they were best friends. We thought that they were boys, and. You know, they're on the cover of Sports Illustrated Kids, right? Best friends issue, right? And all of a sudden, doesn't sound like they've talked for, if you're going from May to January, 5 months. How is that possible? That your quarterback not talking or texting the number one wide receiver, and then there's still a blow up when it, like, there's still issues or hard feelings coming in to the season? Like, that's a terrible sign, you know? So, and then it continued on from there. There was, I don't know, John, if you heard Tim Graham and friends. Tim Graham talked about this one incident in the Jets game last year. I'm sure you probably saw it on Twitter. It mentioned, but Tim Graham said that first game where the Bills lost to the Jets in New Jersey, you know, Josh Allen's talking to Kyle Allen in the locker room, like he's kind of like got his head down. Guys are coming by, like other players are coming through the locker room. They're putting their hands on, you know, Josh's shoulder, patting him on the back, you know, dapping him up like, it's okay, man, we'll get the next one, right? Like, you know, what good teammates would do. Say, we got this, you know, don't worry about it, let it go, like this and that. And not that Josh Allen isn't acknowledging him, but he's not like, you know, he's pissed. He's angry at himself. He's not happy. And then Diggs comes over to him and Tim mentions, he's like, I didn't write about this. He's like, and I don't know what he said because I wasn't close enough to hear specifically what Diggs said. But after Diggs said something to Josh as he passed through, Josh said out loud, it's one fucking game, like yelled it, right? Like, so that's not something you yell if someone's like, great game, right? Or no, not great game, but like, it's all right, man, don't worry about it, right?
Well, you don't want a bunch of yes men either, right?
No, but you.
So you gotta take criticism too from your teammates.
But maybe
now, they gotta help you be better, mm-hmm. But if 52 people come by and say, oh, we'll get them next time, and one person says, hey, we need to do better, you can't get pissed off at that.
If it was that, that's one thing. We got to do better. But it also sounds like
there might have been some expletive deleted with that, but why not? I mean, that's warranted. They lost
badly.
Allen was the number one fault in that game.
Oh, yeah, for 100%. He was the reason they lost. He turned the ball over, like, what, three or four times? Like, it was inexcusable,
and they're,
right? Like,
they were bad, too.
They were bad. It felt like, though, that response, like, John, if it was you or me, like, we have a good relationship, I like to think. We have a good relationship as friends. I like to think we have a good relationship on this podcast, right? Like, talking. But if I was like, John, like, if we ended this episode and I was like, John, you really need to step up in this one area,
fuck
right?
You, Nate.
It's one fucking episode, okay? Like, you would probably hear that and be like, okay, all right. Like, you would take it as like, okay.
Would Mike would have been like, we'll get him next time, John.
yeah. And I would have been like, but if that was the first time you ever heard criticism from me, because we have such a good relationship, because we get along well, and you do such a good job here. Like, if I just said it for the first time, you'd be like, oh, like, it would kind of catch you off guard, right? Like, you wouldn't necessarily react like, well, fuck you, Nate. Like, because it's the first time you're hearing it. Now, if after every single episode, I give you shit for something, and then, you know, something bad happens, like, let's say you have a bad episode or something happens or whatever, and I continue to give you shit for it, then it might boil over to fuck you, Nate, or it's one fucking episode, right? Like, that might be the breaking point is my case.
Well, do we know that, though? Because we're just talking about the Jets game, right?
Yeah, we're talking about the Jets game, but I guess what I'm trying to say in a roundabout way is that this wasn't the first time that Diggs either said some sort of criticism or something that wasn't positive, that it had been going on. And that's why, allegedly, Allen had that reaction, right? Like, if someone continues to, like, harp on you for something, whether it's a manager, a coworker, a teammate, a significant other, like, eventually you're just like, give it a fucking break, okay? Like that seems like that reaction. As someone that's human, that has those reactions sometime in some way, shape, or form, that seems like it to me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think...
Not that it wasn't even warranted. John, to your point, not that it wasn't even warranted. Diggs might have... You're right.
In that particular instance...
He shouldn't have yes men. You're absolutely right. But if it's a nagging thing... It's a nagging
thing. Like what you're saying, like over 4 years, and like same thing in Minnesota. Yeah, I get what you're saying. I think Diggs probably means well. Mm-hmm. And he wants what's best for the team. And obviously himself too, but he wants to win. But that could be a detriment to the team, but the way that you described it.
I don't think, throughout all of this, though, like, it's funny how quickly Bills Mafia turns on a player when they leave here, or they're not, like, on great terms. Like, I loved having Stephon Diggs on this team. This is the most exciting this team has been almost in our entire life, almost.
Phenomenal. Second best receiver the Bills have ever had all time, after Andre Reed. And he was only here for 4 years.
He would have broken every one of Andre Reed's records if he had retired here, I think, for sure. He probably broke some.
He would have got close, for sure. He was good. And he was, like, you see him, like, pregame, tossing balls to kids and all this stuff. Like, good dude.
Good dude. Good dude. You can't even be, like, even if he was a malcontent in the locker room, it doesn't mean he's a bad person, right? Like, there's a distinction between the two. He could really want to win, and maybe he's not the best at saying that to Josh Allen or whatever, but... He seemed like a really good dude. And from what I've heard from, like, media members, like, they said, like, say what you will, maybe he's not perfect. He's not a bad guy, though.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to miss him either way. So
it was a distraction, though. And what I think this also says, John, is that they were willing. You said that they ate a bunch of dead cap, the most dead cap I think anyone's ever done for a receiver or something like that, or maybe any player they've eaten when they traded. But it's like, that just goes to show you how much that whatever the Bills front office thought that he was causing was worth losing him and losing all that money and not getting a ton in return for him, because they wanted him off the team, it sounds like. Like, they, I'm sure they got the compensation that they wanted or close to it, but, like, they just gave him an extension like a year ago. Like, that, it's...
Yeah, that was the biggest mistake they made, was giving him the extension last year. That was the one mistake.
But again, when they did that, they probably thought things were good, and then they just didn't want the headache. And
or maybe they're hoping things were going to be good.
They were hoping things were going to be good, and they knew.
Letting him go now, as opposed to next year, the more you think about it, makes sense, because he's already in his 30s now. They're getting a second round next year. They probably wouldn't get the same compensation if they waited another year, especially considering he hasn't played so well the last 13 games, including the last two playoff games. Including any of the playoff games. When was the last time he scored a touchdown in the playoffs? And then the dead cap they eat this year, as opposed to waiting till next year and then eating it next year instead. So they're free next year, and they get that second round pick. So from a value standpoint, that works out. It just stinks that wide receiver was already their biggest need. That's the one crux to the situation.
Yeah, it's so funny because we already had wide receiver as the biggest need, and now it's like a super uber biggest need. Like, we just wanted somebody to be alongside of Diggs, like, to help Josh Allen, and then maybe eventually take over for Diggs or whatever. Or, you know, at least, you know, we're like, we don't know what the future of Stephon Diggs is, but we thought we had at least, you know, a year to figure that out.
Yeah, we were already thinking, oh, draft a receiver round 1 and 4, and now we're thinking, yep, still do that.
You'll probably have to move up to do that now.
But, and like, I'm thinking about the trade scenarios and, like, moving up to get one of those top three guys, like, you're mortgaging a lot of future draft picks to do that. And their defense is Swiss cheese now because they had to give up all their aging veterans. And that's going to be tough to do. I could see a medium move up in the first round, move up a little bit, but I can't see moving up to get one of the top three. There's no way.
No way. Well, let's talk. We will talk about that in a minute. I still want to talk about Diggs for a little bit longer, just in the fact that, like you mentioned, like they're going on a youth movement now. I mean, think about their core players. Like you said, you know, you sent us the graphic of the eight captains for 2023. Six out of eight of them are gone. They've either been released or their contract expired or whatever. They got traded. Like that's a big core of this team that's gone now. They're going on a youth movement now, which is a good thing, which is a different thing we're used to. Like before this year, it was like, oh, you know, Tremaine Edmonds was the biggest player that we had really lost in the Bean era. Now we lost Tre'Davious White, Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, Mitch Morse, Gabe Davis, and now Stephon Diggs. Like those are huge pieces. You're losing like three or four all pros there, two or three pro bowlers, like significant pieces of the team. Do you think that when you look at everything that's happened, and there's really only the draft because they will save, you know, another $10 million post June 1st with the Tre'Davious White release. But the way I guess I'm kind of mentally thinking about the season is I'm always going to root for them. And I think that they're going to make a run, but I'm not thinking they have a better chance of making a run this season than last season. Do you? I know it's early, but as of things right now,
no, I think they can still go undefeated. I mean, the schedule hasn't came out yet, but you know, I mean, they got Josh Allen. The offensive line is pretty solid right now. Even with Mitch Morse gone, I mean, they picked up Lyle Collins. They got Connor McGovern at center, but they still got Alec Anderson and Will Clapp waiting in the wings. Ryan Vandermark is really good depth too. Tommy Doyle. So they got 12 offensive linemen on the roster right now. They probably don't even need to draft any. Where was I going with this? You're talking about, Super Bowl. Yeah. Super Bowl. So they're going to have to draft some wide receivers. pick up a third string running back, couple of safeties, defensive tackle. So it's all different, right? So I'm already anticipating what's going to happen. So like end of the season, it's always doom and gloom, no matter what, because of everything. But once we get to August, we're all going to be like, oh, it's all fitting together right now. So I'm just jumping the gun to August. It's all fitting together. It's going to be fine. They're going to have a good draft, and they're going to win Super Bowl, I hope.
So this is interesting. Joe Marino tweeted out, you know, you mentioned Stephon Diggs in the playoffs, like he's underwhelmed a little bit. And this is, he mentioned, Joe says that Stephon Diggs over the last three playoff elimination games for the Bills, 2023 KC, three receptions, 21 yards on eight targets. 2022, the Cincinnati game we mentioned, four receptions on 10 targets for 35 yards. 2021, the Kansas City game, this is the championship game, three receptions on six targets for 7 yards. No touchdowns in any of those games. Like, whether it's by design or just the way that it happens, he disappears in the big games. I mean, you have no further than to look at this last game when his first touch of the game, he fumbles it. And luckily, Dalton Kincaid knocks it out of bounds. Like, and then there's later on, you know, where he drops a fourth down pass or third down pass. I can't remember. And then, you know, there was that huge drop, you know, when he was open deep that would have changed the course of the game potentially. It's unfortunate that he didn't. If he catches that pass, maybe we're not even having this conversation that he's in Houston right now. And his reaction, I think that game, John, I can't remember off the top of my head for sure, but I think that was the first time that we ever gave Stephon Diggs a wall of shame, was that AFC divisional game against the Chiefs in the playoffs. It was just like, you're supposed to step up. This is supposed to be your game, and you had like three costly mistakes.
I think that's true. And another part of it is the Bills, outside of Diggs, have largely neglected the wide receiver position. Gabe Davis has been inconsistent. They brought in Emmanuel Sanders. They brought in John Brown. They brought in different guys, Deontay Hardy or Trent Sherfield. None of these guys are anything. And teams are able to focus more on Diggs. Not that that's an excuse necessarily for an alpha dog, but like I mentioned before, he goes to Houston. Now he's going to be the wide receiver, maybe three, potentially, which is good for him and for Houston. They get a one-year rental. You mentioned they ate the, or they were able to take the last 3 years off his contract.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that makes me feel good about this trade in general, too, is that, like, I mean, Stephon Diggs, I think, still has, like, years in him. Like, he was on track for a career year the first 6 or 7 weeks. But then it was after that, including the playoffs, where his performance dropped off a cliff, right? Like, he had more drops. He wasn't, you know, getting, he had the most targets on the team, but he didn't have the most yards or receptions after the first 7 weeks or so. And then it was just like, he wasn't really as part of a big a part of the team, and they went 6-1 the last 7 games. So it's like, they can win without him, or they were proving that they could do that in one way, shape, or form, you know? So,
right. And part of that is probably the offensive coordinator change. Also, there's that factor.
But
maybe that lack of production helped ease the pain of them letting him go too.
They're like, hey, I mean, they still had a good game offensively against the Chiefs. The best, probably the best game offensively that any team had against them in the postseason. They just couldn't get it done on defense. That was the big thing.
Well, they're their like fifth string linebacker covering Travis Kelce at that point. Like, what are you gonna do?
Exactly. He was AJ Klein was injured and just came off his couch a week and a half earlier, and now he's got to cover Travis Kelce. Like, that never goes well.
Yeah.
I know. I don't blame the defense, but it was like, man, if it wasn't for bad injury luck, the Bills wouldn't have any luck at all.
I mean, I was giving McDermott so much credit because the defense was so injured, they made it even that far.
And yeah.
Obviously, the straw to break the camel's back at some point, but that was rough.
Yeah, it was. I think we hit on a lot there. Again, sad to see Diggs leave, because it feels, again, like this offseason is just the end of an era for fandom, for people like us and you guys just watching the Bills. It's just like this was a really good core group of guys that were let go. But you know what's funny, John? You know what I think about all those players that we were talking about that got released or just their contracts expired this season or got traded away? Like, none of them were draft picks for the most part. Besides Trey White, like, a lot of these guys were free agents when they brought him in, and they were just good free agents. So, you know, it's got to start hitting on the draft, and it won't be as big of a deal. So let's hope this is the season. Let's hope this is the season. John, any final thoughts on Stephon Diggs before we move on to big board of Buffalo Bills needs?
Let's do it.
Okay. Real quick, Lyle Collins was signed by the Buffalo Bills on a one-year deal. He is a former guard/tackle in the NFL. I think it's just one of those things where they wanted a really good swing tackle just to be safe. I don't think he's going to compete with Spencer Brown for right tackle or anything like that. Definitely not going to compete with Deion Dawkins for left tackle. I think he's just like you remember Ty Nsekhe a few years ago that signed with the Bills, like, as a swing tackle? Like, I think he's just depth. Like, and not only that, John, I was thinking about it earlier today that let's say Spencer Brown requires a new contract and they decide that they can't afford to pay him because of all the money they have in Josh Allen and other players. Maybe they look at Lyle Collins. This is like a Taylor Rapp sort of situation where they give him a one-year deal. If the time comes and the veteran before him doesn't stay, then he gets the job because he's had a year in the system. Like, that's not a bad sort of farm system that Brandon Bean's doing for these free agents, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Plus, they got Ryan Vandermark, so there's another guy there that could potentially fill that role, and then they could have a third option by next year, but either free agency or draft. So I think they'd like to do these like plan B's and C's for these positions. And I think they've been doing well.
So John, we had on our big board of Bills needs, we had on our first tier wide receiver and safety. I think we can move wide receiver to its own tier completely at this point.
I kept it the same. I guess you could do a 1A, 1B. But I'm not 100% sure the safety starters are necessarily set yet, or should be set yet, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
I did combine my third and fourth tiers once we get down to that point.
Oh, okay. Ooh, all right. Yeah. Yeah, well, offensive tackle definitely went down the needs after Lyle Collins signed. Like, that was a solid free agent signing.
And Will Clapp, they got 12 guys signed already on offensive line. So
yeah, they're looking pretty good. I mean, I like Ryan Vandermark You know, we were talking about him last week, week before. Like, that's good, solid depth. Now they have good veteran depth. I mean, if you look at the offensive line, you know, I think interior offensive line is something that they could look at. I mean, they could, I mean, Alec Anderson, Will Clapp, you just mentioned, like, just not a ton of, like, you know, we just don't know a lot about Alec Anderson, and Will Clapp is.
Yeah, they'll bring in more guys. I mean, I like Alec Anderson, but yeah, like, they'll bring in more guys, but I don't know if they necessarily need to, like, prioritize in the draft at this point.
No, like when we're looking at everything, you know, in that tier of, like, offensive linemen, that's kind of like day three for sure, right? Like, I mean, you're probably not going to spend a day one or two pick on those guys, right? But let's look at let's look at our big. I mean, we have wide receiver at the top. We mentioned that, and then safety is still our next biggest need because, like you said, you don't like those guys as much as you like the guys before them. That's for sure.
Yeah, I do like I'll concede like a 1A 1B with receiver safety. I think because the receiver, obviously, with Diggs gone, that makes it even more imperative.
Plus, I think the position is just much more important.
True.
Like, you could get a stud safety. Like, that doesn't change your defense to be, like, a top five defense. But if you get a stud wide receiver, like...
I'm just looking at, like, the second tier that we had before. And I think safety is definitely above them. So, like, I put it in between receiver and those.
So, I like the 1A, 1B. Yeah. I like the 1A. Okay. All right, fine. 1A, 1B. Jeez, fine. Okay. Second tier, though. Second tier. We've got defensive
second
line.
Second tier is the same. Yeah.
Second tier is the same. It's basically defensive line and cornerback, right? Like, that's...
Yeah.
It's all defense. Everything but linebacker, basically, on the team, we could use. So,
yep.
It's wide receiver and everything but linebacker. those are the biggest needs on the team, essentially.
Right.
So, like, if the Bills went... They probably won't go safety first round, but if they went defensive tackle or edge defender, like, that wouldn't necessarily surprise me.
Yeah. And then after that, it's just like line depth, running back three, kick returner, punt returner. And actually, that might be important with the new kickoff rules. And then if they can improve on kicker and or punter, you always got to take a look, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Especially punter. I'm not a fan of either of the punters. And then... I know Bass has some question marks in the playoffs, but yeah, I put all that in the third tier.
John, what do you think of this? Okay, something we've never discussed positional needs wise, and Joe Biscaglia had it in his he did a 7-round mock draft in his I think it was the 7th round. The Bills ended up taking a long snapper. What do you think of that idea? Getting a little cheaper long snapper when they've had such a Reed Ferguson, I don't know if he's ever had a bad snap as a long snapper, but what do you think about that idea? Like, we've never put that on there. Get a little cheaper at one position, a cost control contract for a long snapper.
How much does Reed Ferguson cost?
He totally makes like $1.25 million a year, $1.3 million a year, or something like that.
What's the vet minimum?
He just signed a 3-year, like, less than $3 million contract. So, like, he makes less than $1 million a year. That minimum has got to be close to that, you know?
I mean, I'm not going to argue any 7th-round pick. If it's going to create competition at any position, I'm fine with it. So, there you go. That's my opinion. I don't care. A 7th-round pick or undrafted guys, I'm not expecting the world. But if you're going to compete and they think that they might have potential upgrade, especially for a special teams player, why not give it a shot?
Let's see. The minimum... Okay, so Reed Ferguson has 7 years in the NFL. His lowest salary can be $1.1 million per year. So he's like right at that vet minimum, basically. But if you get a 7th-round pick, you go from $1.1 million a year to like $200,000, right? So
you save $900,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I mean, what is that like in a?
I mean, okay. It feels like the Bills have already got out from under their cap hell, right? Like, they're going to be, seems like they're going to be fine. They get rid of a lot of aging vets that had expensive contracts.
I'm not against it, but I'm not like,
they traded Diggs, so that's not going to count next year. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, if they think this other guy's really good and they draft a long snapper in the 7th round, yeah, sure, give it a shot. But
I agree with you. Day 3 picks, I'll do anything. Give me anything. Like, besides maybe... like backup quarterback, maybe I wouldn't even hate that necessarily. You could stash him on the practice squad, you know, probably. So I'm not against that. I wouldn't necessarily like it, but I'd be okay with anything. You give me, you know, maybe even a tackle in the day three, probably to compete with Ryan Vandermark. Like, sure. Like, why not? Whatever. This is the year, though, John, and we've mentioned it this whole time, that like the Bills are probably going to double dip at wide receiver, right? It just feels like that's...
They should almost triple dip at this point.
I don't know about that point. This draft
I was,
is...
I was double dipping before Diggs. Now I'm like, I want triple dip. No,
that double dip, though...
You want Matt Collins starting on the outside across from a rookie?
No,
and Curtis Samuel in the slot. That's the team.
This is so, John. This is like the top three wide receivers for the Buffalo Bills going into 2024 as of now. Curtis Samuel, Khalil Shakir, which you know we like both those guys, and then Mac.
But they're both slot receivers.
Mac, yeah, they're both slot receivers. Mac Hollins as like the starting outside guy. Like that's
and then Justin Shorter.
Then Justin Shorter, who's been injured and hasn't proven anything. And then you have Andy Isabella, Tyrell Shavers, Brian Thompson, KJ Hamler, which at this point are all just names on a piece of paper. Like they haven't proven anything really in the NFL.
I think Shakir has some outside experience in college.
He does. He's done both. He's done both in the NFL. He can do both.
Are we banking on that?
No. But he's primarily slot, but he could.
Because we could do.
Chris Samuel does both.
Rookie at let's say we don't move up from 28 and we get whoever, receiver 28. And then Shakir on the other side, and then Samuel
in the
slot.
Well,
and he's got Kincaid, Knox, and Hollins is just a role guy and maybe Shorter to something. I don't know. Still kind of dicey.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you have first round draft pick. Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir, basically, like, I think it's going to be mostly Khalil Shakir on the outside, and then they kind of switch it up between Samuel and Shakir, right? And then, though, like, you have to draft someone on day three at some point. So, because they don't have a third round pick, so it's either their first and second round pick, and then, like, a fourth, one of their fourth picks.
I think a first and a fourth is warranted for receiver.
Yeah, this year.
I mean, worst case scenario, they either stay at 28 or trade down and take a defensive tackle for their first pick.
Dude, John, Bean's not trading. Bean's not trading down. He's not trading down in the first round.
Stays at 28 and takes a defensive tackle. Trades up and take. Trades up and takes a kick returner.
Dude, anything but wide receiver that Brandon Bean moves up for would. Bills Mafia would lose their collective shit. Like that would be insane. John, what do you think about this nickname for Brandon Bean after this offseason and him getting rid of everyone, trading everyone, cutting everyone? What do you think about this one? Because we like to come up with nicknames. Bean the Guillotine or Guillotine Bean.
It's been a rough free agency and we kind of expected it, right?
I mean, it's not, we don't hate everything. We understand it. I don't love it though. I don't love starting over from scratch, right? In some areas.
Well, it's not completely from scratch. Like, the only two starters not returning on the... three starters.
And now with Diggs, it's three.
Never mind.
Well, their number one wide receiver.
Morris, Diggs, and Davis.
Their starting center, their number one wide receiver.
Davis, like, he was invisible anyway by the end. So I don't even count Davis.
Yeah.
Diggs and Morris are the only two on the offense. The defense is really what got gutted. So I think if the Bills can get a dynamic receiver in the draft that can start day one, they'll be fine on offense.
Did the defense really get gutted, though? Did they really get gutted? It was their secondary, and only their safeties, really.
Their two starting safeties, Trey White,
but they didn't have him.
I know. I know.
So...
I'm counting Trey White in that. They do get their linebackers back next year.
I would count Trey White if they didn't get Rasul Douglas. If they hadn't traded for Rasul Douglas, I think that I would have counted Trey White, but I felt like they already replaced him midseason, but that's me.
Right. I mean Saran Neal is gone also, so it's another defensive back.
Maybe it's not as bad as we're making it out to be. Maybe.
I mean Leonard Floyd's gone.
Leonard Floyd's a big loss, yep.
Dane Jackson, another defensive back.
We get Matt Milano back, which feels like we got back a player.
Terrell Dotson's gone. Shaq Lawson, Jordan Phillips. I mean, there's a lot of depth on the defensive line that's gone. Not necessarily the starters like Rousseau, Miller, and Epinesa.
Just thinking out loud.
Depth is gone.
Looking at the depth chart for linebacker, it definitely warrants a draft pick maybe on day three. I don't think they necessarily will because they signed Nick Morrow and they have Dorian Williams as backups and Baylen Spector, but I think they draft one.
Yeah, I didn't even have linebacker in my top nine, but I can
see it. No, it's not on mine. I'm just looking at the players below the starters.
Yeah, I mean, Milano, Bernard, Dorian Williams, I mean, those three are there, and they're playing
two linebackers anyway, so.
Yeah.
Okay, John, so we got our positional needs. Let's talk about what it would cost to move up in the draft for, like, one of these guys, right? So we were looking at, you know, where generally, like, the top three wide receivers. So the top three wide receivers in the draft being Marvin Harrison Jr., the wide receiver out of Ohio State, Malik Nabers, the wide receiver out of LSU, and Roma Dunze, the wide receiver out of Washington, right? So if you look at
mock, move up to number four, what would that take?
Okay. So, John, you want to move up to number four, okay? So just give you an idea.
Then they get to pick the best receiver they want.
So the number four pick, which Arizona probably wouldn't give up because they don't want to move down to 28, right? But anyway, let's say that there's something. Their draft pick at number four is worth 1,800 points by if you go off the draft tech, you know, trade value chart, which we're just looking at, you know, just getting a general idea of what these picks cost, right? Number four, Arizona, 1,800. Guess what the Bills pick at 28 is worth?
Seven hundred something.
660. So you would need three of the Bills' first-round picks almost to equal the Cardinals' fourth overall pick, which the Bills obviously don't have, and every round it goes down. So, like, their Bills' second-round pick is worth 300 points, right? So right now you're still at 940 points if you give away the first and second-round pick. You're almost halfway. You're a little over halfway to Arizona's number four overall pick. Right? So now you're talking next year's first, which is probably going to be equal to about, I don't know, like say 700 or 800. And now you're starting to kind of get within that realm. So your first, your second, and a first next year, and maybe even a second next year, that might get you to the fourth overall pick. That's a lot of picks to give up.
So who's taking the second best receiver? Which team?
Malik Nabers has been consistently going in mock drafts to the top five or six. If he drops in any mock draft, it's like to number nine with the Bears, right? So let's say he does drop, right? Like, so the most analysts have him going to the Giants at number six or the Chargers at number five, right? But if he does drop to number nine to the Bears, so like, let's say you're trying to trade up with, who's a team that's drafting at seven or eight, right? So the Titans or the Falcons, right? The Titans' seventh pick is worth 1,500. So now you're talking to get up from 660 to 1,500. You're talking a first-round pick this year, a first-round pick next year, probably a second-round pick next year, or you do a first and second this year to get to 960, and then a first-round next year. That's like a good trade. That's like an equal trade. A first, a second this year, and then a first next year. Like, that's like almost even, but that doesn't mean it's in Tennessee's favor. So here, let me tell you what Joe Biscaglia just recently did, a mock draft where he did a trade with the Tennessee Titans. Okay. In his scenario, the Bills give the Tennessee Titans trade number seven and 182, which is the fifth round pick. Okay. So they give them their first-round pick and a fifth-round pick to the Bills for the Bills' first-round pick this year, their second-round pick this year, and their second fourth-round pick, okay? So three picks this year and next year's first-round pick. That's what Biscaglia has the Bills giving to the Titans. A first this year, a fifth this year, and a first next year. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. The Titans are giving the Bills a first this year and a fifth this year. The Bills are giving them a first, second, fourth, and next year's first. Would you do that?
No, that sounds like too much.
Dude, Malik Nabers, from everything I've read about him, is that if Marvin Harrison Jr. wasn't coming out in this draft, he would be the best receiver in the draft, right? The same argument I heard could be made for Roma Dunze, which we'll talk about in a second. But if that's true, and you're getting potential like Jamar Chase of this draft or whatever, or whatever best NFL receiver you can think of any draft. Like,
I don't
do you
know,
really care about next year's first?
It's exciting, but then you think about like, oh, when they traded up for Sammy Watkins.
Well, okay. Difference.
I know it's
that.
Completely different. I know it's completely different.
But it's got the same feelings, right?
Yeah.
I was pissed when they did that. Do you remember being pissed when they drafted, when they traded up? I'm like, what are you doing?
They still needed a quarterback. They're like, oh, no, help this quarterback with a receiver. No, you need another quarterback.
Yeah. I mean,
just like
I got
when they drafted all those first-round running backs all those years.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're looking at that. That's kind of like the trade draft scenario for if you wanted to get Roma Dunze, which his average draft position, again, is like the 7, 8, 9, 10 range. Like, it's almost the same. You figure you're giving up almost the same amount. You know, you're giving up your first and second this year and a first next year and then like a pick or so somewhere on day three.
Yeah, they're not going to get any of the top three guys. And it's unfortunate because those they're clear the top three in the draft. But it's a deep draft. It is a deep draft. So if they wanted to like a medium trade up and get Brian Thomas, that's fine. Or they could stay put. And like we talked about last week, they could get Donovan Mitchell or Xavier Leggett or, you know, somebody like that.
So some of these, like, so if you look at Brian Thomas Jr., the wide receiver out of LSU, who is pretty much, for the most part, the consensus fourth best wide receiver in the draft. Now you're looking at late teens to trade up to, right? So like, if you look at like where he's being drafted, like sometimes it's as high as like 11, right? To the card, someone trading down or the Cardinals or something, or like you see it going down to the Bills at their own pick. Like, there's a wide range of where Brian Thomas Jr. goes in the draft. So if you're looking at, like, say, mid-teens, like, let's say you're looking to trade with the Rams, right? Or maybe the Jaguars at 17, right? The Jaguars draft ahead of the Bengals. The Bengals might be looking to take a wide receiver. Instead of getting Brian Thomas Jr., the Bills decide to draft ahead of the Bengals, get with Jacksonville. So the Bills have to go from 660 points to 950 points. You just give away your second round pick and that's enough to move up, right? Like that should be about from going to 28 to 17. I don't know if I love it as much, but you don't give up as nearly as much.
Yeah, it really sinks in on a third round pick because in any of these scenarios, if they give up their second this year, they don't draft again until later in the fourth round. after their first pick. So I don't know if Bean's willing to do that. Although he has been known to be aggressive when he wants a player too. So I don't know.
Yeah, that's a price I could swallow more, or maybe they figure like it's next year's second along with that, right? Like what either their second or the second they got from the Texans, which is actually the Vikings second round pick, which we didn't talk about that, John. Like that could be a pretty high pick considering that the Vikings quarterback on their roster right now is Sam Darnold and whatever rookie they end up drafting. So at number 11. Yeah. So odds are they're not a playoff contender.
He'll be like, hey, look, the Vikings are going to suck next year. Take this pick from next year that we have from the Vikings and just give us this pick. I don't know. It's a deep draft, though. I mean,
it's a deep draft.
They could just stay put and see how the cards fall. Not as exciting.
I'm curious at how. No. I mean, it will be exciting, though, for them to add a player like, you know, a Brian Thomas Jr. or something like that, or obviously a Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze or Marvin Harrison Jr., which, again, like you kind of mentioned, I don't necessarily think the Bills will get. I think, I don't know how aggressive Beaton's going to be, and I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. It just doesn't feel like they're going to, but they need a wide receiver.
If they trade Josh Allen to the Cardinals, then they could get the pick to get Marvin Harrison Jr., and they're all set.
A lot of people talking about that they want to get rid of Josh Allen too. Like, okay, all right.
Do you see the Giants, whatever the somebody like on the Giants sportscaster journalist, whatever, I don't know, even his podcaster.
Yeah,
I saw something on Twitter about some Giants guy being like, "Oh, Sean should get on the phone to Bean if they're tanking. They should just get rid of Allen and give us a call and trade us Allen."
Yeah, we'll give you the 6th overall pick. Who doesn't do that? I'm like us. I don't want to start over at quarterback. No one does. Stop it.
Nope.
Stop with that.
Once you get that, you don't want to let go of that.
That's almost as crazy as you thinking that Bill's hat I like is a Dolphins hat.
Yeah, it was definitely. Let me tell you, I was scrolling through. I saw that. I'm like, oh, Dolphins hat. And then I'm like going through. I'm like, wait a minute, Nate and somebody else commented on this. Wait a second. Nate's a Dolphins fan now? I don't understand. Mm-hmm. You could barely
notice.
I'm not
a Dolphins fan, John. John,
you could barely notice the Bills logo. It's Miami themed. The aqua colors.
What
the
makes
yellow,
it Miami
the greens,
themed? Oh, because
the,
of the aqua.
The teal.
Yeah.
And yeah, everything else. Like, it may as well have been a Dolphin.
It's got like teal. It's got green palm trees. It does have a teal logo for the Bills, but it's got to go with the ocean theme, the sun, the ocean water, the waves.
Yeah, the Miami ocean theme, yeah.
So in your defense, I did wrote on a poll under this, do you like this hat? And after 140 votes, 67% of people say no. So
the people have spoken.
Yeah, some people have questioned my sexuality. Because of this, because I kind of like this hat, then that's fair. That's fair. I'm not going to fight you on that one. My wife would probably agree with you. So that's kind of what we're looking at for giving up players. John, is there anything else you want to add to the wide receiver talk? I know we're kind of talking, you know, hypotheticals here, but.
No, I mean, it's kind of funny. Like after last week, we're like, okay, receivers are number one need. We're going to talk about receiver. And then next week, maybe we'll talk about safety. Now we're not even considering like any other position in the first round at this point, right?
Almost, like, almost
it
not
has
at all.
It has to be a receiver.
It has to be. It almost has to be. And like it went from being receiver where they might move up like five spots, maybe 10 spots, who knows, to like they might move up 20 spots to get their guy now because they have to. I still don't know if they'll do that or if they'll want to do that, but...
Let me tell you, I would hate what they would have to give up to do it, but if they did get Adunze, I would be super excited.
Dude, if they got any of those top three guys, like, there's a potential that that guy could eventually be better than Diggs, potentially. You know, like, that's a big deal. Like, that's a huge... What you would give up for him, especially in a draft this deep and... Like, I would be able to justify losing our first-round pick next year because you're hoping it's not a good first-round pick anyway, right? So, I mean, you know, I think, yeah, I'm okay with that. I'll find a way to justify. I'll find a way to justify anything they do, no matter what it is.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of factors. Like, so now all the teams know that we are, I don't want to say desperate, but we're desperate at receiver. So that puts a wrench into things. Plus... The Bills have kind of neglected receiver outside of Diggs over the last 4 years. So what are they like? They could throw a wrench into things themselves and be like, no, we're going to do this instead.
Yeah.
I think they're going to do that. I mean, typically they've drafted outside of last year. Kincaid was the first time this regime has drafted an offensive player in the first round. It's always been defense up until then. And now they're missing a lot of defensive players. So you never know what they might do.
I'd argue that I 100% agree with what you're saying about the Kincaid pick, it, not only from a standpoint of them drafting an offensive player, but that was the first year where it felt like they finally drafted a player that wasn't an immediate need right then and there. Like, they didn't need tight end. Tight end wasn't a huge need.
Well, we were saying receiver, but he's still a receiving weapon.
Yeah.
So I'll give it to him on that.
Do they do it 2 years in a row? Maybe they look at that and they're like, we already did that last year.
You may have the reference.
Stop. Go with
we're
four tight end.
Fullback this year. We're going to go 32 personnel all the way.
That'd be funny. 14 personnel, one running back, four tight ends. You know what it is?
Yeah, we do it that way.
just keep drafting tight ends. We'll just be like, yeah.
I do like Quentin Morris. So yeah, I do like all three of their tight ends.
I know you love Quentin Morris. He's okay. He's not bad. they could draft someone and he'd easily be cut. So we'll see. We'll see. I hope he ends up being like the guy. That's like the third string. But anyway, let's talk about real quick, John. This is the first episode that we've done completely outside of Buffalo Rumblings. We're not part of Buffalo Rumblings anymore. We've been podcasting as a group. John, Mike, and I couldn't make it this week, but John, Mike, and I, we've been podcasting almost weekly, sometimes multiple times a week since 2017. And then in 2018, we were able to actually start off the Buffalo Rumblings podcast network. Matt Warren messaged us and was like, hey, he was the editor-in-chief of Buffalo Rumblings at the time. Do you guys want to start off our podcast network? And they basically, you know, took our feed and it became the Buffalo Rumblings podcast network. It was a really cool thing. Like, Buffalo Rumblings is a huge brand, so we were super excited about it. It's the first time we ever got paid for the podcast. Not a lot, but it was like, hey, dude, just, I mean, we did this for a whole year to get a cent. So that was kind of cool. It was a cool run in general. A lot of the people that do podcasts or shows on Buffalo Rumblings are super cool, down-to-earth people. We started this feed, our independent feed on our own, last year for a couple of different reasons. One had to do with the fact that we were kind of fearing that this day might come where we were going to lose our association with Buffalo Rumblings, because I had seen them get rid of good podcast networks on Vox Media. Vox Media is the parent company of SB Nation, and they had done that with podcasts that were almost as good as Buffalo Rumblings, if not a little bit better. So I was like, this might happen to us at some point. So let's get on the right side of it. Let's start our own feed, and we'll also post on Buffalo Rumblings, which we did for, you know, what, 6 months, all of last season and into the season. And so we've kind of gotten a head start on it. But one of the other main reasons that we kind of were thinking about going on our own is the fact that, like, and this isn't a Buffalo Rumblings thing, this is SB Nation, I think, in general, is they just kept adding shows to the podcast network. When we first started, we were the show, and then Matt Warren started a show with, like, Rumblings Q&A, and then Anthony Marino came over with, like, Breaking Buffalo Rumblings and Believe, and, you know, then Bruce Nolan and, you know, Nick and Nolan podcast. And all of a sudden, we had, like, five or six shows, and it was, like, one episode a day, basically. It was a great setup. We were getting lots of downloads. We were growing. And then we kind of started to add more. And it had nothing to do with the quality of the show. It's just that, like, after 7, 8, 9, 10, and we had, like, 22 shows for the Buffalo Rumblings podcast network this past season, which is just absolutely ridiculous. 22 shows a week. And it's just like, they're just all, we're just too many different voices. Like, you could love someone else on the podcast network and absolutely despise what we do, so you're probably not going to subscribe. But to, like, Buffalo Rumblings, like, you could say, this isn't the numbers, but let's say, like, we were each doing, like, four podcasts, we're doing 5,000 downloads a week, right? So $20,000 downloads a week. So, like, let's say you're doing that. But then if you add 8 shows, well, now the subscribers might go down to 1,500, but we're still getting more overall downloads. And that's what they cared about. It was just, you know, the overall Vox Media, all those, you know, they just cared about the overall downloads. So our shows, like, all suffered because of it, all of ours. So we're like, well, if we're going to break off a little bit, like, and kind of start our own brand again, like, let's do this independent feed. So we've already started it. It's up. You can find us here every week. I don't know what the future holds for us as far as if we'll join another podcast network or if we'll stay independent. I have to talk with Mike and John about that a little bit more in depth. I've talked to several really cool people that, you know, maybe we make a decision in the next few weeks or not. I'm not sure. But when I mentioned it over social media, a lot of you said some really nice, kind thoughts about our show, that you enjoy it, that you like it. So we appreciate the heck out of it. We appreciate you guys sticking with us through the last 7, almost 8 years now. And yeah, we're excited. We're excited for what the future holds, man. We started with, you know, 2 or 3 downloads per episode in the very beginning, and we were super excited about that. So, you know, we have to start over kind of from scratch, and we're excited about that too. You know, see where this goes. We love talking Bills. We love entertaining. And yeah, this is just a chance for the three of us to talk. And if you guys have any emails, or if you guys want to talk about any of these guys, and email us your thoughts on what you want or what you don't want, or scenarios that scare you or scenarios that you really love, let us know. Email ctwpod@gmail.com. So yeah, John, on our own again. Like, I'm trying to think of a good analogy of us starting our own. It's kind of like, oh, you know what we're like, John? We're like Michael Scott in The Office when he started his own paper company after leaving Dunder Mifflin. You know, him and Pam and what was he, Ryan, right? And then they went into the same building in a smaller office. Like, that's us. Like, you know, Vox Media, you know, Dunder Mifflin, and we're just, you know, the Scott Paper Company, whatever it was. So we can do it, man.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I remember when we first started this thing, you'd already been talking about it for a while. And
that's how long it takes me to do something, John.
I was like, yeah, whatever, yeah. Because you're like, I mean, you made a good point. It's like, oh, we talk about the Bills anyway. We should do a podcast about it. And I was kind of placating. You know, I was like, yeah, yeah, sure, whatever. And then one day I come over and you got the microphones all set up. And I'm like, oh, we're doing it, aren't we?
Oh, God, what have I gotten myself into? I mean, we've done, John, like, for nothing, for growing or from starting from nothing and coming up, like, we've accomplished a little bit, you know, doing this. We were one of the first. There was only a few fan podcasts out there. There was almost no media podcasts out there. And we started something and, you know, we kind of hit it at the beginning of it.
I know. I shook hands with Bruce Smith because of this. And I have not washed my hands since.
You shook hands with Bruce Smith. And that was, yeah, yeah. You've not, that is Hall of Fame hand that you have right now. You have that. You shook the hand that took down Hall of Fame quarterbacks like hundreds of times. That's crazy. That's
crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. That's first overall pick hands right there. Pro Football Hall of Fame, all pro. Sack leader. Is he the all-time sack leader?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I still remember when I did that interview, and you guys can listen to it on the podcast network. That's on the Circling the Wagons podcast feed, because it was one of the first episodes. I think I did all the interviews. I put in all the Bills, former Bills players interviews, just to, like, you know, get those out there. Because Bruce Smith was one of them. And I remember the first question I asked him was like, you know, what made you so great? Was it this? I listed off 7 or 8 things, like your film study, your off season conditioning, your this and that, like your love of the game. And he's just like, all of them. I was just like, oh, okay. All right. He was like, I was amazing at everything, Nate. You don't understand. Like he was not the Shaquille O'Neal of defensive ends, of edge rushers, you know, like he left nothing out there. Like he tried his best. He gave his all. Right. So,
Let me tell you, it looked like he still could have gone out there the day we interviewed him.
Bro, didn't he? He looked like he looked in. Yeah. Jeez. My God.
It was awesome too, because like the interview started late. And we're at DeLago, and it was during the Giants game. The Bills are playing the Giants, and like not only us, but Bruce himself would like start peeking around to see the TV to see what was going on when there was a big to do of like, oh, there's a big play. Like we all went over, including Bruce. Like Bruce wanted to see what was going on too. So it was like real kind of like, you know, like one of us, like kind of like enjoying the game type of thing, not just, yeah, you know, a celebrity at that moment in time.
Like what you would always hope that a former player, especially a great former player like that would do. Like he's like us, right? Like you could see some sort of similarity between John and Bruce Smith, right? Like there's what's going
let's
on.
Not, let's not get crazy.
John's also 6'4", 275 pounds, can bend around the edge like a, yeah. So, but yeah, that was really cool, John. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up, because he was just like, you'd hear the crowd go, whoa. He would run away from like this meet and greet he was doing to be like, what's okay. We're winning. So that was really cool. So yeah, on our own again. Here we go again on our own. So if you guys please like, subscribe, rate the podcast, will be going on from here. So even if, luckily, you know, Buffalo Rumblings, you know, we weren't supposed to do this, we started our own feed, but like they were one of the few podcast networks that didn't allow us to have our own individual feed for the most part. So like even if we join another podcast network, like we'll still have our own individual feed. You can subscribe to us and other podcasts that you enjoy. It doesn't have to be only Buffalo Rumblings. So you get, that was another thing, you get like 3 downloads a day. And I don't know about you, John, like I actually listen to podcasts like every day for the most part, especially during the week, during work. Like I'll get through like 1, maybe 2 a day, but it's like I listen to like several different things. I mean, it's comedy, you know, world stuff or whatever. Like it's just entertaining stuff. And I don't have time to listen to like 4 podcasts a day on the Buffalo Bills, even if I love them. I don't have time to do that, you know? So I think a lot of
people. Yeah, I usually just listen to music.
90s grunge music, to be specific.
Maybe.
What of it? What's your problem? What do you care? Oh man. Cool, man. So thank you guys all for listening. If you guys have any thoughts about what we mentioned about the Diggs thing or the trade up or potentially a trade down, which we haven't really gotten into. I don't know if we're going to talk next week. I don't even know if it's worth getting into like defensive tackles, John. Maybe we just talk about like potentially if the Bills traded back or second round wide receivers the Bills could take. We already mentioned Keon Coleman, Xavier Legette, stuff like that. there's possible receivers that the Bills take another swing at in the second round. You know, so like we can talk that. I think we're going to still focus on wide receiver, though. Day one, day two wide receivers. I don't know why we would leave that spot. Maybe we'll continue. We'll do some mock drafts in the next, you know, few weeks going forward. But I think we should also, besides day one and day two wide receivers, John, maybe the top 15 or so wide receivers, I think we start talking about maybe some day three guys that the Bills could pick. Like, you know, what traits do we want our wide receivers to have? Like things that we think that the Bills would like, things that we want in that wide receiver, like separation, route running ability, speed, good hands, route running tree, you know, experience, stuff like that, right? So, so we should talk about that a lot as well. So thank you guys all for listening. Again, please rate, subscribe, review, you know, tell a friend. We'd appreciate the hell out of it. You guys have already done a ton of that. If you could just message this, text it to your friends. That'd be awesome. Super appreciate it. So signing off for John.
Go Bills. Love you.
And for me, Nate, go Bills. Love you too. Enjoy that solar eclipse. We'll talk to you guys again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Circling the Wagons podcast. Download and subscribe to us in your favorite podcast service. Email us at ctwpod@gmail.com. That's Charlie Tango Whiskey Pod at gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at ctwpod. And most importantly, go Bills!
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills.
Nobody circles the wagons like the Buffalo Bills, Nate. Well, listen, the whole show is called Circling the Wagons. Say no more. I love it.